Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And we are joined tonight by a very special guest.
Count DM, if those are your real names. If you are reviewing a murder mystery, you must enlist the most intuitive inspector. That is me, Inspector Jacques Clouseau, to assist you.
Perfect. No notes. Zero notes. That was perfect.
Nope. Oh, my God. Peter Sellers, yes. How I miss him.
I miss him.
Yes.
That was, of course, our beloved blockbuster correspondent, Rob Rector. We are stretching the definition of blockbuster this week, but we thought it was important to have him on board nonetheless.
Yeah. Tangentially blockbuster because of the director.
Exactly, yeah. The director and the ridiculously overqualified cast.
Absolutely.
And that's why we love him. All right. Yes, we are talking about Knives Out this week. But before we get there, I believe we have some random crap to address.
Sure do, starting with the book report, because I read another book.
Love it when that happens.
This one is Horror Store.
Ooh.
By Grady Hendrix.
Nice.
Gary Hendrix?
Grady,
I should have looked that up.
Yeah.
Gary Hendrix.
Grady? Gary?
Jimmy?
Starts with a G.
Jimmy?
I got that much going for me. Anyway.
Definitely a G name.
So this book is set in like a knockoff IKEA, essentially. Ooh. And I read it as an ebook, but it's worth getting the actual like hard copy, the printed version, because the book is designed to look like an IKEA catalog.
What?
Nice.
That sounds incredible.
Fight Club.
So the book cover looks like an IKEA catalog cover.
Okay.
And then all the chapters are like these ridiculous Scandinavian words for things.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if it's like,
and I mean, is it a picture book? Like, is it?
No. It's a novel.
Oh, okay. Just making sure. You said it looked like a catalog.
So. Well, like it's the layout is reminiscent of an IKEA catalog. Ah, okay. So each chapter title is this like ridiculous Scandinavian word. I don't know what language it is. And
well, I think like an IKEA, it's a fake Scandinavian word.
Well, apparently they aren't all fake.
No, just most of them.
Anyway, so and the chapter title pages have a picture of like a dining set or a bed, and then like a little product description.
That's so nice.
And halfway through the book, the like normal everyday furniture pieces turn into torture implements.
Wow.
Because of like what happens in the book.
Cool. Now, if you buy the book, is it like hardcover, or did they even publish it on glossy catalog pages as if it were a catalog?
No, it's like a book.
Okay. I just thought it would be nice if they had gone that extra level published it to look like a catalog. No, it wouldn't hold up, but you would charge a cheaper price for it.
No, it's like, but it's this, it's like a different, slightly different size than like a normal trade paperback. And it really is just sort of like the cover design and then the chapter design.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
So cool.
And it's being adapted into a TV show that I think is weird because a movie would have been a better choice.
Oh, it's not that long a story?
It's not super long. It's a quick read, but it's a lot of fun.
Okay.
And what little I did read about the TV adaptation, I'm like, this is not what this book is about.
Oh.
Because what I read from the TV, it's sort of like consumer culture, and we have to consume, and it doesn't make us happy, and all this other crap. But the book is set inside the fake IKEA store.
Entirely.
Like, it's got nothing to do with the people who come to buy.
Oh.
And the only sort of reference to that is, or like the shopping experience, is that the store is laid out to purposefully confuse you and to disorient you.
Nice.
So it's like the Overlook
like
Hotel.
Like
the Overlook Hotel.
Yeah. You just sort of lose all track of time while you're in there.
Oh.
Like a real IKEA. Yeah. Dead
so,
on, guys.
As I mentioned before before we started to record, we have a new family member, a dog that we have rescued from, and we went to this little town called New Hope, PA. New Hope, PA, if you do get a chance, I'm going to send you a couple of these pictures that I took in there. They have, it's this really progressive little town, kind of like Austin, Texas, if you've ever been or heard of that area there. But they have in it this one shop called the Creeper Museum. And
awesome.
It is filled with all of these oddities, and there's actually a human skeleton there. There's stuffed animals that are you know, like goat's heads put on human bodies.
Oh my God.
There's all these different items. There's actually, you know, what they consider to be possessed dolls. There's one, I'll send you a picture of Jack, which is a dark spirit that inhabits this little doll. They have original Edgar Allan Poe books there. It is just, I mean, you could spend, it's a tiny, tiny store, but oh my God, the stuff that they have that lines the walls here is just phenomenal. And yeah, I just made me think of that when I was, when you were talking about it. It's just like this store with all these oddities, and they have torture devices in there as well.
Oh my
and
God.
Oh, it's a fascinating store. If you ever get a chance to even look online, I know that they did a couple different like paranormal investigations.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, but at least you can kind of browse through that. You can kind of browse some of the antiquities and oddities that they have there. It's really, really, worth checking out.
That sounds amazing.
New Hope. So where is this place?
New Hope is in Pennsylvania. It's but in, like... no, kind of, a little bit north of Philadelphia for a perspective.
Okay. Okay. Cause wow. When I went to Ohio, we passed through Pennsylvania, but that's like the other side of them.
Yeah, yeah.
from what I gather, yeah. Okay.
It's really worthwhile. If you do get the opportunity, I highly recommend even just checking it out. If you're a horror buff, even in the least, it's a really cool little visit. It's set in a town. The town is situated in kind of a, I wouldn't say mountainous, but a really rugged terrain. And there's a waterway that, I think part of the Schuylkill River goes by it. And, there's lots of little dining establishments and, you know, kind of like beatnik-y shops and things. But yeah, it's even worth it. Just a day trip. If you're even, I would say within an hour's distance, it's worth going to.
Cool.
Neat. Yeah. Okay. Next up, I watched a movie. I think there's a slight chance Rob might have seen it as well. Let's see. I watched The Irishman.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Oh, you took an afternoon. You took an afternoon off.
I took a whole day.
It's a lot. It is a lot.
Yes, it is.
Good
yes.
God.
Oh God, is that a lot? Yeah.
So, but here's the funny thing. Someone mentioned that too, and it is so true. When you think about it, like, I have friends who could spend a day binging Seinfeld episodes on Netflix, but yet they complain about the length of The Irishman.
I know.
You know?
It's kind of insane. It's like,
it's perspective.
I've sat down and I've watched, you know, 8 episodes of television in a row. There's no difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. But yes. And while, I mean, he's still really good at his job. No one's complaining about Martin Scorsese. The man's really good at his job. Oh, Lord, should he have just gotten some other actors to play these parts?
Oh.
I found it so distracting. The effects were not great. It's really hard to watch. Yeah. Like,
so it's so funny because my good friend who I run the Revival House with, and I guess we had just linked up via the Force, and we decided to watch it at the same time, unbeknownst to one another. He had texted me right after I watched this one scene. He said, you know, I don't find the de-aging that wasn't as jarring. And it really wasn't, as it was the physicality that was demanded in some of these scenes. And you have there's one scene in particular where a younger Robert De Niro's character beats down a shop owner for accosting his daughter.
I know.
And he moves just with that kind of gangly, you know, awkward motions that most 72-year-old men, no matter how fit they are, you just don't have that same fluidity.
He doesn't have the physicality. He just doesn't.
No, and those damn blue contacts that they had him wear. I thought that was so much more disturbing, or the coloration of his eyes, whatever they did. I fixated more on that than I did his lack of wrinkles.
Yeah. Because the thing is, and it's important to remember that if they had spent the time and money, what they could have done was put young De Niro's face on old De Niro's body.
Exactly.
The way they did in
Civil War, Captain America.
Yeah, Civil War, where it's like they didn't smooth out his face. They just took enough video of young Robert Downey Jr. and they just mapped that onto his face. And they could have done that here, but instead they just smoothed out his face to the point where it's like no one's ever looked like that, because it's just a smooth old man face. And you look at him when he's playing, and the thing is, you go to the first scene, because you start in the the present day, I guess, is when he's an old man. But you start on the day when, spoiler alert, he murders Jimmy Hoffa. Right? So that's where we start, and then the rest of his total is flashback until he kills Jimmy Hoffa, and then the movie's over. And they flash back, and I'm like, I don't understand what age he's supposed to be.
No.
When I looked at when he's messing with the truck and he meets Joe Pesci for the first time, and it's like, the face is giving me nothing. He moves
Pesci
like an old man.
Kid.
He sounds like an old man. Pesci calls him kid. It's like, is he supposed to be younger than Pesci? Faces give me nothing. They have old man voices. Like, no, just cast a younger person to play that part.
Yeah, use that same kid that they had in, what was the one? Brooklyn, Bronx Tale.
Yeah, Bronx
Remember
Tale.
Or what was the one, Once Upon a Time in America? The kid that they had, it looked just like him.
Oh,
they even put the fake mole on him. They put that fake face mole on
him. There's ways to do this, guys, and you're not doing it.
No, I agree. I totally agree. That was the only thing. Now, that said, that was the only thing that really kind of took me out of it. Otherwise, holy shit, that guy's still on fire.
Great story.
Yeah.
Like, great story, really well-made movie, but he just cast younger guys to play the younger them.
Agreed.
And, or maybe just don't cast Robert De Niro as an Irish guy at all.
Maybe
cast Liam Neeson the way you thought you wanted to.
Yep.
Because they talked to Liam Neeson for a while about maybe Liam Neeson playing the part, and I'm like, that probably would have been a better choice.
Yep.
You know, because he's an actual, he's just an actual giant Irishman, which when you see footage of what the actual Frank Sheehan looks like, you're like, oh my God, he is a huge guy.
Yeah.
And Robert De Niro just isn't.
Yeah.
He's just not a big guy.
Yeah, so Pacino makes a better Hoffman than
Hoffa. Yes.
Yeah.
Than he does a Frank Sheehan. So I think they really, the casting was a problem here. And you're right, it's not just the effects, it's that they just don't have the physicality.
Yep.
Yeah. So problematic.
I agree.
All right. Moving on. I also watched a TV show. Well, I'm in the middle of watching a TV show. Who all is watching?
Is it Cops?
I know, right? That's the problem with having to keep your window open all the time for weather. Sometimes you get cops driving by. I don't even think I'd live in a bad neighborhood, but it happens a lot. I watched the Mandalorian, the first four episodes of it.
Yes.
Is everybody watching that?
Yep.
You haven't been?
I don't have Disney Plus.
Oh, okay, of course. But you're aware of Baby Yoda, of course.
I am.
Okay, good. That was a great surprise. And I just want to, like, as much hate as I have for Disney as a corporation, as much trash as I think they are as a corporation, the fact that Jon Favreau understood that Baby Yoda had to be a surprise, and to the point that he got Disney to not make any Baby Yoda merchandise.
Yep.
That's incredible.
No, I think they've made it. They just haven't released
it. No, they didn't
they did
make
not.
It. Nope.
Really?
No, or else it would be out by now. No.
Yeah.
Because they knew that in order to make merchandise, you have to tell 800 people about a thing. And within those 800 people, someone was going to let slip. So they just didn't make the merchandise.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's why there's no Baby Yoda merchandise coming out. There's going to be stuff after the show's over. But they didn't make merchandise. He told them into giving up Christmas with Baby Yoda just to preserve the surprise.
And think of all the Baby Yodas in a manger,
It sells itself.
Sure,
I mean,
sure
finally,
it does.
Just think about it. Like, you can finally do Star Wars nativity scenes because you've course. Got Baby Yoda for all of that stuff now.
You've got the three wise men with you, Chewie and R2 and C-3PO. And,
see?
You know.
That would be fantastic. No, and
but
I mean,
I also think that not only was he able to do that and they put their full faith in him, but it feels like he understood the reason why we all fell in love with Star Wars in the first place.
Yep.
Like, and I'm not saying it's a perfect show, because it's not. It's got its flaws. But that said, this feels so authentic and just so in line with the lineage of the first three that I'm just every episode I've been hooked. I mean, in fact, it's gotten successively, like, each one is better than the last.
Yep.
And four, what I maybe love about it is, code a little bit, but still, the first three, I was like, oh my God, I'm so into this.
Well, I think what I love is you make a good point, which is, in a way, that none of the other stuff did, like the prequel trilogy and the new movies, right? This feels like it is set in the exact world of those first three movies.
Yes.
100%. Even though the tone is different than those movies, even though the feel is different, it's clearly set in the same world in a way that I adore.
Yeah, there's a tangible element to this that that has been lost in all the CGI-ing of and trying to introduce us to all these new planets and such. There's just something that you can almost, you know, kind of taste the dust on your tongue when he's walking through these towns.
So good. No,
and Werner Herzog.
I'm loving it. Werner Herzog is perfect.
Yeah,
he is perfect on this show. I love him so much. I hope we get more of him because he's been two episodes so far. And I'm like, I just want more of this guy.
So do I.
He's been fantastic. But yes, we will make sure DM gets to see it at some point because it is completely worth watching, especially for Star Wars super fans.
Yeah, totally.
All right.
don't be such a fuss bucket. You'll like it.
I can't help it.
We understand your instincts, but trust us, it really is that good.
It is.
All right. I believe we have lists to deal with, Rob, starting
with you. We do, yes. So I am seeking input. So as you may or may not know, I also get paid to write film reviews. I'm one of the last three. and for the establishment, the Cape Gazette, thecapegazette.com, that I write a weekly film column for. I am getting ready to do usually I do a best of worst of the year, but this year I'm doing a decade, in film.
Wow.
And I'm not necessarily going for like picking the best of each, but more kind of the most notable / influential / you know, I don't want to say which one is best or worst. This is more of just kind of the ones with resonance or the ones that made change or the ones that, you know, moved the needle somehow.
You might have come to the wrong place because we watch strictly garbage.
I know that, but garbage can move needles too. And some of these, and garbage can move needles. I mean, trust me, when you hear some of my suggestions, I'm throwing some out there and seeing if I might have forgotten any. I mean, you know, I kind of just bullet listed the more, I guess the events that were related to film, like MoviePass or, Quickster. If you remember that when it was,
Quickster.
Yeah, Netflix's, ill-fated, split. So some of the ones I have listed, and here's where I would seek any input you have. Avengers, obviously.
Yeah.
Blackfish, because of what the wake of Blackfish
came out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Get Out.
Okay.
Boyhood.
Right.
The Richard Linklater. Fury Road. Mad Max.
Naturally.
Of course. Mission Impossible Fallout.
Right.
Because I feel that's the best of the franchise so far, in my, my opinion. Inception. I feel that's been often used, even though it came out in 2010. I mean, we wouldn't have, for better or for worse, we wouldn't have a Doctor Strange after that. But
nope.
And you know, we could go back to Paprika in 2006 on which it was based, but still, Hereditary.
Yeah.
Holy Motors, which I still just love.
It's an amazing movie.
It really is. And it's just such, you know, you can suck at La La Land. I think this is like the true ode to Hollywood, to just the magic of cinema.
So are you talking like 2009 to 2019 or 20? No,
this is 2010.
2010. So, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. All right. Cause I would have said Paranormal Activity, but
yeah, that was too
early. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That missed it by just a year.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but I'm still infatuated with Annihilation.
Right.
I could argue between that and Ex Machina, but
I would put Annihilation first.
Actually, okay. A better movie is The Machine.
Which one is The Machine?
What's The Machine?
It could totally overshadow by Ex Machina. It's kind of the same idea.
Okay.
Oh. But it's, in my opinion, a much better movie. Much more interesting.
And that was in that same decade?
Yes.
Okay.
I think. Oh, no, I don't know. All right. I'll get back to you on that.
Okay. All right. Let me know. Yeah. Last Jedi.
Right.
Drive.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
I get that.
Parasite. I know we talked about that briefly last one, but, and I know that's it. The coat of paint might still be fresh on that, but I do believe that will have legs. That and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, just because I feel like that was Tarantino's most authentic work and not like a remix, like he's kind of
so used to doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And not that I'm not knocking it, but, and then,
been some real dumpster fires. Like Suicide Squad.
I was going to say, I meant just something
move the needle forward. I meant move the needle forward, not backward.
What I thought was really nice is just the open politics of something like Snowpiercer.
Oh, that's a good one too, actually.
Just like the the ability to make an openly political movie that's still an amazing action thriller.
Yeah, that's not that's a good idea. I might have to put that in there. Yeah.
What about John Wick?
Yeah,
I'm not on the political front.
No, obviously you're changing the subject.
No. I agree. Okay. All right. Yep. That's another good one. You're right. Well, I almost see them as like one movie.
Yeah. I think John Wick is worth mentioning just because it's like, you know, essentially the workers it's the filmmakers turning on what studios have been telling them people want forever and ever and ever. Like, there's this whole marketing apparatus and there's this way of shooting movies cheaply and focus grouped. And John Wick is filmmakers saying, yeah, that's not actually what people want, and being proven right.
And then you have Deadpool, which is like the vanity project kind of on steroids, I guess. And he fought forever to make it, and it finally got done.
Okay.
And everyone was saying you can't have an R-rated superhero movie. It's like, well, actually you can.
And it made all of the money, and then Joker made all the money again.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. Okay. All right. I'm including those.
Yeah, the only other one that was on the list against the studio system, that they don't happen much, but they do happen.
No, I like both of those. And that kind of goes along with I just mentioned briefly in a bulleted, item, again, unpublished yet, but, A24 and how they're, you know, that studio, that's kind of the Miramax of the decade.
Yeah.
In that it's really pushing these, you know, these kind of, obsequious, these, you know, really strange projects, and giving them, the financial stability to be released on a large format. So, When They See Us, and I know that that's kind of only tangentially not a movie, but I feel like kind of if The Irishman can be 4 hours, this was four like 1 hour segments, from Ava DuVernay. And it is really some of the most, emotionally draining 4 hours I can remember spending on anything.
It is. And I mean, the weird part is you could almost edit it into an Irishman length film.
Well, if they can say you're exactly right. And if OJ Made in America can be considered a film, then why couldn't this?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Deadpool, John Wick, got those. Okay. All right.
Snowpiercer.
Well, Snowpiercer. Yep. Got him.
Right. Time for a very different list that maybe could have used some input because it's not very good. This week's list is the 16 best ever mystery movies every crime junkie needs to see.
I'm so desperate to find out what these are.
It comes from a website called Best Life Online.
Okay.
Not something I've ever heard
I'm
of before.
Immediately suspicious, nope. But continue.
Yep.
Okay, it is not enumerated.
Oh.
Is that the mystery?
Well, I think the mystery is for us to figure out which one is the best of them. And I think that's
right.
Gotta be
right.
What it is. Yeah.
Okay. So we are starting with Sherlock Holmes.
Which one?
Which one?
Guy Ritchie.
It's not a mystery.
Right.
Spoiler alert, it's not
I guess
really
it has
a mystery.
A detective in it.
It's
it
a superhero
a
film.
It, but yeah, it's a superhero movie. Come on. Like, you can't call it a mystery if he figures it out because he goes to a guy's workshop and finds all of the tools for how he did all of the things.
Right.
Here's how I did everything. Oh, okay. Well, thanks. But please, next.
Okay, next, Mulholland Drive.
Is that a mystery?
God, I don't even consider that a mystery.
No, like, it's not, it's a weird thing because,
yeah.
I mean,
it's a dream.
Everything happens twice and it's a dream. And I went to a video to explain to me finally what happens in the movie. And I was like, and now that I watch the video, I'm like, okay, well, now I understand 100% what happened in that movie. But it's not a mystery at all. It's just a weird fever dream.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. This might be more in the mystery territory, I guess. The Fugitive.
The Fugitive? That's an... Okay.
It's, I mean, no. The,
well, it's the mystery of, like,
the... He does want to find who the one-armed man is. And there is... But it's really more of a thriller. And I mean, that, you're right, he does...
It's an action thriller.
It's an action thriller. And yeah, he's solving his wife's murder, but it's not a mystery in any way you want to focus that word.
Yeah.
By comparison, something like, I think you have to have, like, there's no suspects in the movie.
I'm sitting here thinking, like, The Usual Suspects, you know, or
you
Chinatown
to,
or whatever,
You need to figure out what's going on. Like, you have to be about unspooling a mystery, and while he does want to find it, it's not about that, it's about the chase, and he also figures it out. Mm-hmm. It's what the movie's about. All right, continue.
Seven.
Okay, I mean... is it weird that I want to say that there's a difference between like mystery movies and like detective like movies about police solving a crime?
Yeah, okay, no, so totally.
There's okay. So I think you're trying to make a distinction between a procedural and a whodunit.
That is exactly
there.
What
you go.
Doing.
That's yes. it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And
I don't think
procedural.
Yeah, and the thing is, yes, there's a mystery to solve, but. Procedurals aren't mysteries. They're about the procedure of how people solve crimes.
No, I'm thinking
something
still
like,
a mystery at the heart.
You're right, there's
procedural.
Still a mystery. Yes, but.
I'm thinking something like Gosford Park or.
Yes, there
yeah,
you go.
You know? Yeah.
Clue. You know?
Yeah, Orient Express.
Orient Express. Yeah, those are whodunits. And I guess we're just thinking of whodunits, so we should try and be more open to them
let's
and.
Broaden our minds.
Yeah, have them put on there. I will say, Seven's an incredible movie. But I don't think it's one of the best mysteries of all time. All right.
Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
That's a really good mystery movie.
Yeah, that's a mystery.
Oh, wait. Original or remake?
Well, they're talking about the remake, but they're like, oh, you should see the original also. It's like, no, just pick one.
Just pick
the
one.
Original.
Take the original.
The original's better. Come on.
Yep.
But I guess they know their viewers aren't going to watch a foreign film, so.
That's God
forbid.
Okay.
Not sorry, in the best life. If I know my best life readers...
Right.
All right, go.
Okay, I don't know how you're going to feel about this next one, The Da Vinci Code.
No!
Oh, good
That's
God.
That's such a garbage movie.
I never saw it. I read the book. And when I got to the book, I was like, yeah, so what?
I know, right?
Yeah.
Big deal.
And you summed up the movie, too.
What I love about it, it's like, it's a globe-trotting mystery with zero stakes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. Like, okay, yeah. These group of people believe that this is Jesus's DNA. Okay? And?
Right.
And? Like, so? What? What does that affect? That affects nothing.
Oh, well,
we might be able to confirm our, might be able to confirm her lineage by checking the body that's been buried beneath the glass pyramid at the Louvre.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, great, but whose body is that? I don't think that there's like a file that proves that that's Mary Magdalene's body.
Like, but while we're waiting, let's watch someone self-flagellate. And
I know, right? it's so weird to have this, like, it's a conspiracy where if they cover it up, it doesn't matter. If it's revealed, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yep. All right, go.
Okay, next, the usual suspects.
We specifically brought that up as something we could talk about. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, using their broader definition of mystery, 100%. I love The Usual Suspects. I don't care about what those two people did. I love that movie.
Yep.
Okay. Next is Shutter Island.
See? That's a creepy mystery.
Yep. Yep.
I just have weird mixed emotions because I figured it out before the movie ended.
Yeah, I did not figure it out until... Yeah. You had a very different experience with that movie than I did.
Yes, maybe than most people, because people really like the movie. And I'm like, it's great, but...
If you know what's going on the whole time, it really feels like it's wasting a lot of your time.
Yeah.
Although, I gotta say, it's possible to make a movie where you know what's going on the whole time that doesn't feel like it's wasting your time, which we're gonna talk about in a couple of minutes. All right, next up.
Okay. Get ready for this.
Oh, no. Please.
Identity.
No!
Oh, right? God. Oh,
no, you can't. That doesn't belong on any lists.
No, especially not with something with best on it.
Oh, God. That's such a bad movie. Ugh. Oh, and talk about a waste of your time. Oh, yeah, no, Identity's terrible.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, what's next?
The Game, a movie I love hated.
I know you hated it. I loved
this movie.
Yeah, I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I really liked that movie.
A lesser Fincher, but still.
Oh, yeah, I just think that man is a stylistic genius.
That was it. It was a lot of style. A lot of style.
So stylish.
Yeah.
But I get where a lot of people are pissed at that movie, because, again, I'm talking about a movie that wastes your time.
Yeah, it does feel like a cheat, but yeah.
But I do love it. All right, next up.
Gone Girl.
Well, we've already done a whole episode about Gone Girl, so we don't have to weigh into it further. I had a lot of problems with Gone Girl that even a wonderful performance by Tyler Perry couldn't save that movie for me.
Okay, you're not going to like this next one.
Oh, no.
Murder on the Orient Express.
Let me guess, the new one.
Of course the newest one.
Of course the newest one. Why are we even asking? No, I don't like that one. But again, you can listen to an episode about my explaining my feelings on that one.
Yep.
I don't have to go into it here. But I was not a fan, and I presume I'm not going to be a fan of Death on the Nile either.
Maybe not.
All right.
Okay, we have a few more to go here. The Sixth Sense.
Oh, that is a really broad definition of the word mystery.
Is that a mystery? Yeah.
No, God, it's just a movie about him helping a kid, and then it's got a twist ending. That's not a mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, having a twist ending, it doesn't make you a mystery.
Right.
Yeah, because you're not wondering, like, also, if it was a mystery, the only mystery is what's wrong with the kid, and we found that out in the trailer.
Uh-huh.
He can see dead people.
Yeah.
Also, the movie's called The Sixth Sense. No, that's not a mystery movie by any definition of the word mystery.
Yeah, I think the author here is getting confused. She thinks a twist ending constitutes a mystery.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, this is definitely not a mystery. Double Jeopardy.
Oh, no. Are you kidding me?
I like this movie a lot.
It's a fun movie.
Not a mystery.
No.
That is not a mystery at all. Oh, God. I mean, I do like it, though. That's a really fun movie.
Mm-hmm. I hope Holmes and Watson's going to be on here.
Oh, you know, I finally watched that.
Oh,
no one should watch that movie.
Good Lord, that is...
It's weirdly bad.
It looks like someone just blended all the scenes in a food processor, and they figured whatever came out, they would
good enough
paste it together. Oh.
It's bad when, like, oh my god, we can't release this to theaters. Maybe next Netflix will buy it, and then Netflix
will, whoa, shoo, take this back to the dump.
Hell no. And it's just like, why would you wait a decade before making a parody of the Sherlock Holmes Guy Ritchie movies?
Yeah.
Why would you wait a decade to make a specific parody of that specific thing?
It really felt like there was just no script whatsoever, and they just said, okay, just mug and ham it up and ad lib, and then
something
we'll go to the
funny
next
will happen.
It's got to, and we wait and wait. All right, sorry, I got a slide.
No, I get it, I get it.
It's okay, we got two left.
All right.
Okay, so, Memento.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Amazing mystery.
Yeah. Yep.
Great movie.
Film noir, I would say, but, you know, whatever.
It's a film noir mystery. Yeah. I think that's
still a mystery.
Yeah, there's plenty of film noir mysteries.
Yeah.
Okay, and can you guess the last movie? It's an actual mystery.
It's Clue.
Scooby-Doo.
Clue. It's got to be Clue.
It better be Clue.
It's Clue.
Of course it's Clue.
Yay!
It has to be Clue.
Finally.
The best mystery movie ever made. It's a bit of a stretch, but not that much of one. I stand by that statement.
No, I agree.
Yeah, and thanks again, Rob, for giving me the chance to interview the creator of Clue that time.
Oh my gosh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, we did one of the Natsukashis with the writer-director of Clue, which gave me the chance to explain to someone that no, Jonathan Landis didn't write a word of that movie.
Right?
No, it's like, that's the thing. It's like, his contribution to the movie Clue was, what if we made a movie and it had three endings?
Yeah.
That was his contribution.
That was it.
And it's a great idea, but that's all Jonathan Lynn, and it is a masterwork.
It really is. It was fantastic.
I love that movie so much.
Still one of the best performances Tim Curry has ever put to film.
His
career. And that's saying something.
No, the man's always been a genius, but that is one of his finest performances.
Yeah.
All right. But yes, Clue, if you haven't seen it, watch Clue, because it's perfect.
And it holds up today. Yep.
Oh, absolutely. All right. But yeah, I got to say, terrible list. But they ended it the right way.
Stuck the landing.
Which raises the question, you know, there's a lot of horror mysteries. People don't talk about it a lot, but the fact is, a good half of early slasher films were giallo-style mysteries, which raises the question, are they still making horror mysteries?
Well, I wouldn't know, because this week's upcoming horror movie is called Do Not Reply.
Oh.
Yes.
All right, here we go. Chelsea, a teenager, is abducted through a social media app by Brad and is held captive with other girls who are to become victims in his virtual reality filmed murders.
Wait, I don't understand how it's virtual. What?
Is this is this Dee Snider's Strangeland Part 2?
All over again? Yeah. Pretty much.
So I watched the trailer for this.
And?
And it's basically, it's this guy collecting girls.
Okay.
Who
I've never seen that before.
And gonna kill.
Yeah. But for snuff films,
Where does the virtual reality come into play?
I don't know. Cause it, like, in the trailer, it looked like there was a scene where he was wearing some weird, like, jerry rigged VR helmet that he made in his basement.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of stills from the movie, and in one of the stills, one of the girls is wearing a VR headset. So I don't know what's going on.
The twist? So, turns out he never actually murdered anybody at all. It's just his twisted VR fantasies.
Right, right.
No, I think he's actually kidnapped these girls.
I'm sure that is. I just thought that would be a hilarious twist.
He used one of the knives from Knives Out, one of the retractable blades.
God. All right. And of course, Knives Out. Oh, wait. Was anyone significant involved in the creation of this film?
Not that I can tell.
Oh, okay. So no one we need to really pay attention to. Gotcha.
I think so. Made by a couple of brothers.
Russo?
Yeah.
If only. No. all right. So, of course, we do have a movie to watch this week that we all saw. In fact, two of us just saw it last night.
That's right.
Mm.
And we are ready to talk. That movie is Knives Out.
Shing!
Gentleman detective Benoit Blanc, I refuse to pronounce the name the way he does, isn't convinced wealthy author Harlan Thrombey killed himself, so he sets out to discover the truth about his death.
What a delight. What just a first, fun movie.
First, let's say that if you are listening and you have not
seen the movie.
Don't watch a trailer. Don't do anything. The less you know about it, the more fun it's going to be. Because trust me, this is one fucking fun movie.
It's so much fun to watch.
God, this is one of the... Honestly, this is probably the most fun I've had watching a movie this year. Hands down.
Yeah.
Wow, and the year's almost over, so...
Yeah. That's a big deal.
It really...
And you watch a lot of movies.
I watch a shit ton of movies, and this was just so much... I mean, I was just grinning the whole time.
Yeah.
But not... And it wasn't... It was a flat-out comedy, too, but not so much that it undercut the suspense of it.
Yeah. No, there's plenty of great jokes in the movie. There's a huge amount of comedy in the movie, but... The suspense, when there is suspense, it works really well. And what it comes down to, and I think it is that Rian Johnson's, I mean, the man's a genius.
He is a genius. He is such a good writer. Oh, he is. There are so many throwaway lines that any other film, if they had half of them, it would be a great film. Yeah. But they were just cast aside. And if you weren't paying attention to what they were saying and more to what they were doing, then you're missing half of it. Because honestly, they had just these cast off lines that these characters with this such rich dialogue that is just kind of, you know, put as an aside, but it's still so good. And especially when taken in context to what some of the characters are doing at the same time, it makes it even richer. It's just so, so much fun.
Oh yeah. No. And I mean, it is, and this is the thing that we haven't had a ton of lately. Yes. It's a witty comedy.
For adults.
It is a witty comedy for adults. It is about wordplay and situations and just very clever, both character writing and just really good scripting. Just a guy who's great at writing dialogue in a way that we just don't see a lot of these days.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's hard to pick like who the, if I had only one, you know, knock against the film, it would be that I wish I could have spent more time with these characters individually. There are a couple of them in particular, the youngest ones that barely get a line of dialogue put together.
Yeah.
And, but that said, you know, there were so many lines that those they did have that were on the screen that I wish they were even on the screen longer. Toni Collette's character, her take on Gwyneth Paltrow.
Good.
God. And imagining that she is put in that and you put that next to Heredity and good God, what range this woman has. Oh,
she's incredible.
Hereditary.
She's incredible, but I mean, she's been incredible for a long time.
Oh, I know. But it's just amazing to see her just take to it with such finesse. She was awesome.
Oh yeah. She is great.
As is the rest of them. So, yeah,
you know, it's a fantastic cast. I mean, I joked earlier about the overqualified cast, but it's like he set out to make a movie in the tradition of the 70s Murder on the Orient Express and Death of the Nile, where they got this Poirot, because I mean that's clearly what they're going for with the with Benoit Blanc. They're going for a Poirot type character. And what I loved about it was it's like he did the exact same thing, which is he got this giant all-star cast because, you know, you're supposed to not be able to know. There's this old line in Mysteries where it's like, okay, so the detective should be the most famous actor and the second most famous actor is the killer. So the way that those movies did it is they load the movie with famous people. It is just famous person on top of famous person on top of famous person.
Yep.
And we'll talk about, the killer later. I mean, I know, hopefully no one is listening to this point that hasn't seen the movie.
Yes.
Because we are going to spoil a ton. But I do love that he kept that mindset. And it's only like the couple of throwaway parts, like Detective Number Two, The Maid, and The Children, where it's not ultra famous people playing all the parts.
Right.
Yeah.
And not only is it the dialogue rich with the comedic lines, but I also give this movie credit for having something to say. You were saying earlier about Snowpiercer being a boldly political film. And this was one, I mean, they talked about SJWs. They talked about, the safe spaces and immigration and so on and so forth. And they said it with bold strokes and it had something to say about privilege and classism and a way that kind of that Parasite did earlier this year too, that felt fresh, where it knocked both sides. Didn't matter. They had characters who were of the more conservative persuasion, and then you had some who were more liberal, but when it came down to getting the money, man, both of them lined up on that same train, and they were quick to just stick a dagger figuratively in whoever it was who was going to come between them and their money. So it was the skewering happened on both sides, and it was very God, I wanted to say pointed, but then I realized what a horrible pun that would be. So it was very succinct.
No one's going to judge you for your horrible puns. Succinct. It absolutely was. And that, I think that's such a smart thing that the movie does, though, is it comes right down to when it, like, money is at the core of all of this stuff. Right?
Absolutely.
And it's like the over and over again, we talk about how we get from the characters, from the late Christopher Plummer, that it's like all of the problems in these people's lives come from not like all of them being too rich too fast.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, all of it. There's even my favorite dig in the thing. It's like, oh, I'm self, like she's self-made in that she got $1 million loan from her dad to start a real estate company. Gosh, I wonder what that's a reference to.
Bam. There's so much on that. And what do you say about a cast? You were saying it earlier, but what do you say about a cast where Michael Shannon doesn't even get half the best lines in there? Michael Shannon, who is phenomenal in this and who's great, but you have someone like Don Johnson who, for all intents and purposes, you know, could have been a punchline at this point, and he has some of the sharpest lines in there when he can't recall where the maid, what country the maid comes from.
Everybody says a different country.
They know exactly. All the time. And I don't know if you
matter. You, doesn't,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they and don't. You caught the none one of them. Where, like, we've always been good to you. Yeah, but you don't know anything about this woman.
No. And yet he tries to compensate by saying how non-racist he is, and then flexes by saying he saw Hamilton off Broadway.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, when he's talking about the immigration, and while he's saying that, he's handing her a plate, his dirty plate.
Yes, that was hilarious.
God, that was
such a good shot. My favorite thing, and I want to know if this is in the script or something they decided when he was putting the character together, the fact that Michael Shannon plays it, that his character is always just a little bit drunk. Like, he is always like two drinks into the day,
right?
In every single scene. Even when he comes to see her at her apartment at 10 in the morning. Yeah. Or no, 8 in the morning, because the meeting's at 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's limping and he's a little drunk. And flurry. I love that.
Yep.
Oh, such a good call. But everybody's performance is fantastic.
But yet he still has moments of clarity when Christopher Evans' character comes in and he's suave and debonair and he's a black sheep of the family, and he comes in and everyone he gets everyone into a lather and then starts saying, and you eat shit and you eat shit and you definitely eat shit. And then Michael Shannon's line, which I loved, was like, I will not eat one iota of shit.
Yes, that was hilarious.
Oh no, but God. It's like, there's, I mean, you could just recite all of the lines in this thing.
I know.
A tight script.
It really
and that is.
Is
something you don't see that often. You just don't see this tight a script where every line is just a classic. Like, there's a couple of things to get us here and there, but every scene has a couple of just great zingers and perfect exchanges in it.
So,
every single time. And by the way, there's a couple of things that I think I will say the funniest thing in the movie for me was the background acting, like the funniest thing is the framing when she is coming to confess to the whole family about what happened to the dad, and you see in the deep background Daniel Craig gradually opening the letter.
Yep.
So funny.
Oh, that was timed so perfectly.
Oh, it was brilliant. And I mean, it's like, it's brilliant editing. It is brilliant framing. And the fact is, like, there's no close up on Daniel Craig. He's entirely doing all of this acting in the background. So beautiful.
You alluded to this, at the beginning of our conversation, and it has to be mentioned that you said, even though we realize the identity of the, of who did it. So yeah. I wrote that in my review. I said, this isn't necessarily a whodunit. It's a howdunit. Yeah. And it is, it's amazing because it almost feels like he's kind of reinvented the murder mystery. I mean, for all intents and purposes, because we are, as people who enjoy murder mysteries, you know, you go into it, and Count, you and I were talking about how, you know, we love to kind of figure out from this cast who did, you know, you try and pick off the suspects. And this one, it pretty much tells you that, and then in your mind you're like, no, it's got to be so and so, or it's got to be so and so, and it's, the movie keeps going, no, it really is, no, I'm telling you, I'm not lying, this is how it happened, and this is what it did. And then, so then you have to wrap your whole mind about, okay, well then how does this get resolved, the donut hole in the donut hole, which is perfectly explained, but really it felt fresh, it felt brand new. I mean, just, it was a different way of approaching a murder mystery, and I love that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
dump on it, aren't you?
Yeah,
I'm gonna dump on something too after she does. So
okay,
so,
all right, dump away.
So no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was loads of fun. I just thought at the end where you get, you know, the big reveal.
Car chase, the worst car chase ever.
That was hilarious. The worst car, the dumbest car chase, I think is what he says.
Yeah.
The dumbest car chase. Such a good scene.
So, after she's about to confess, and then Daniel Craig has this moment where he's like, oh my God, stop talking.
Yeah.
And then he goes into his big reveal. I thought that took too long.
I disagree with you on that one, but please
longer
continue.
Than it needed to, the whole explanation. And I also felt like, and I, this might just be me because we've been over this before, I just love it when everybody takes advantage of a situation.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was definitely room for that in this script. But it was, spoiler alert, it was just Chris Evans trying to murder his grandfather.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was opportunity there for everybody to be a suspect for different reasons because they might have all had a hand in something nefarious. It just reminds me of this episode of Doctor Who where they meet Agatha Christie.
Right.
And then, you know, and he's like encouraging Agatha, and so there's a cozy mystery involved there, and he's encouraging Agatha Christie to like figure out, you know, who did what, who the killer is. And she like goes to each person in turn and she's like, you, and she points to a guy and he jumps up and confesses something. She's like, okay, not what I was going to say. Like gets everybody in the room to confess to something. And it's just, it's a hilarious moment in what I think is a pretty good episode of Doctor Who. And I was kind of waiting for something similar to happen in this movie because everybody does, I mean, they're all motivated by greed, but I feel like everybody does have a secret that they're hiding. And this would have been a good opportunity to have some fun with that.
I would have liked that. But let me just jump in before,
go,
before
go ahead,
Rob.
Go ahead.
My issue was, okay, and this is, it's similar to what DM was saying, is my issue was I loved all of the supporting cast. But
right.
The problem with the rest of the supporting cast is, as she's saying, you never get the sense that they are suspected of anything and they're never really involved in the mystery because we know what we see a flashback. We see what happens at the start. We see that it's not really him coming down the stairs and that it must be her. And then we just see her flashback that told us everything that happens. But then during the everything that happens flashback, the great grandmother says Chris Evans did it. Right. And
right.
She just says Chris Evans did it.
Yeah.
And so I spend the rest of the movie saying, okay, Chris Evans did it. How did he do? What did he do? And it took me too long to figure out exactly what he did. But because the whole movie we're spending with her in this, and I want to straight this, unbelievably entertaining reverse mystery. Like the reverse mystery of her trying to cover up and her falling along
right.
and all the stuff with the tape, with the dogs, with the footage, like all of that stuff is gold. It is beautiful. But the fact that we have Grandma say Chris Evans did it at the first time, instead of me wondering what really happened and who was involved and why, well, you told me Chris Evans did it right at the start of the movie. And then I just had to spend the whole time thinking, well, how did Chris Evans do it? Like, what was his involvement? And then we get to the talk screen, and the blackmail talk screen only has the top on it. And I'm like, oh, okay, so he switched the drugs, and she actually didn't poison it. There you go.
Okay.
You know? And that's the thing that bothered me, is that if you hadn't told me at the start Chris Evans did it, then I would have spent the whole movie wondering who did what, since there has to be more to the story.
And see, that's where I thought that by purposefully casting an elderly woman whose sight and hearing are escaping her, it's one of those things where she could have seen any number of characters and mistook them. So, you know, the unreliable narrator, where we're not necessarily sure.
I totally get what you're saying, except the one thing they establish at the beginning of the movie is that she knows exactly who Chris Evans is, because she doesn't respond to anybody, but when Chris Evans is storming out after talking to Christopher Plummer, she's like, oh, it's Chris Evans.
Right.
It's like, and he's the person she always recognizes, like she always responds to. And that is the one thing that bothered me.
Well, see, and I thought that they almost threw the scent off by having her come down the trellis and she says his name again, Ransom.
Coming and, back again.
Right. So that she almost sees everyone as Ransom. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I see what you're saying.
I'm with Rob on this one.
That's kind of what I thought about that. And honestly, I thought that when they were going through the interviews and they were talking about themselves and talking about how wonderfully and wildly successful they are. But then I want to see that Doctor Who episode, because that aha moment would have been cool if they just kind of, you know, under pressure decided to blow and give away all their secrets. But I feel like they kind of gradually did in this, like little by little, you stripped away, you know, you had the self-help guru who wanted to invite her to the funeral, but she was outvoted.
Oh, yeah, everybody was outvoted.
How terrible is that?
Yeah. But, you know, so each and brutal. Every one of them just, you know, they started to little by little, as much as they consider her family, then you started to see all of their claws start to come out. No matter how pure of heart they all seemed to be, each one of them slowly morphed into this, you know, just this wretched creature of, you know, fueled only by greed. But,
although I did enjoy how everybody ragged on the Nazi kid.
Oh, yes. God.
Nobody liked the Nazi kid. God. That was beautiful.
That was great.
Including Benoit Blanc.
Yes. Yes. Oh, who had one of the best lines with that? That brought down the house with his line. Yeah. I will say the one line, my favorite of all the lines there, though, was when they were watching security footage with M. Emmett Walt, thank you very much. Having Mr. Blood Simple in there, it was awesome.
So good.
M. Emmett Walt was going through the security tapes in there, and I forget which character even said it. I just remember laughing so hard as they said, "The security tape. It looks like it's a Japanese horror movie.
Japanese horror movie. Yeah.
Am I going to die in 7 days?"
Yeah, it's the other detective, Detective Number Two, fantastic.
God,
Number Two gets a lot of laughs in this movie.
Oh, God, am I going to die in 7 days?
I know. And that's funny, because it's like, Detective Number One, who is, oh, God, I'm blanking on his name. You know, Lakeith Stanfield.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, the other guy, the first dead guy from Get Out. The first guy from the opening credits. Anyway, he's the straight man, and they've got you got the state trooper there who gets so many laughs.
Oh, because he's a fanboy.
He's such a fanboy, and he gets so many laughs in this.
And Frank Oz cameo.
I know. How great was the Frank Oz cameo?
And what's his name? Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He was a voice of, remember they were watching The Mystery on TV.
He was the voice of the terrible CSI show?
Yes.
That sounds like a hilarious show.
I had no idea.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Crushed with a forklift?
They drove the forklift over his head and then burned off his hands in order to keep them from being able to identify the body.
I would watch that. I'm just saying.
That's such a good show. Oh, that was so fantastic.
And Murder, She Wrote in Spanish on the TV.
It was such a love letter to murder mysteries, period, with just everything. Even the house itself, everything felt like
it. This is the other thing, again, and on the topic of missed opportunities, and because I'm a jerk, I guess. But, like, when they're going through the house, and the fanboy state trooper, he's like, oh, this is from this book, and this is from that book, and it's just like this other book that he wrote. So it's like, if Christopher Plummer had sort of built his books around his life and built his life around his books, then again, there's sort of more opportunity for this house to hold more mysteries and to have more skeletons in the closet to reveal. The house itself almost becomes a character.
I understand that. I think that was kind of laid flat when they were talking about the whole piece of wealth, and everyone was talking about how they were these self-made people, and then they were talking about the ancestral home, and Benoit says that was hilarious. Yeah, he purchased it in the 1980s from some Pakistani guy.
Businessman.
Right. So that kind of took the wind out of this like wonderful palatial estate that was handed down from generations.
Crazy shit in the house. So
But he did have stuff all. But you're right. He had stuff throughout the house.
Yeah. I could see that.
That linked back to the books he had written. So it would have been nice if that had paid off in some way, and it doesn't feel.
No, we only have that one kind of hidden staircase or that hidden. Yeah, pathway to the outside, which is really cool. I love that, where the one that she escaped through.
Oh, but the fake window?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. I thought that was really cool. But you're right, it could have had more than that. But that's a small detail as far as I'm concerned.
Well, one of my favorite just writing things about it is the little. It's a tiny part of it, and it's all to the point where it's almost subtext. The idea that. The going back to it over and over again about how similar Ransom and Christopher Harlan are, and just people say it over and over again, and I'm like, oh my god, that's why the fact that he is just like his grandfather is why the minute he found out he was cut off, his first idea was elaborate murder plot.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. You know, he could have spent his life working, like, he could have written books just like his grandfather did.
Yeah.
But no, he was too indolent and too lazy, because the absolute first thing he thought of was, okay, well, what would my grandfather do in this situation? Well, what would he write in this situation?
Exactly.
Elaborate murder plot. Yep. Such a good little detail.
Yeah. So many.
The film is just absolutely stuffed with those. That's the thing.
And it's just refreshing to see something that is... not tied to any previous work of fiction, not based on...
It exists independently.
Yes.
Its own thing.
And I think that's what I'm still swirling in, because I may be overselling it right now because I just saw it last weekend, but I still feel like this was just, it was such a breath of fresh air to see something that was whole cloth just made specifically for this particular and with that said, I would honestly love to see a Benoit Blanc mystery.
I will watch another Benoit Blanc mystery.
Totally.
100%. If he can come up with another one, I am there.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And if it's like, especially because as I joked about earlier about them doing a Death on the Nile, you know, like if they're gonna do a Death on the Nile, they damn well better do another one of these.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely. Like, absolutely. Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like, this is just, it is the, I mean, I don't want to oversell it just like you did, you're saying, but it's like, this
just
is
like
the
I
kind
did.
Of thrill. Yeah, but I mean, like you were concerned about. There
know,
you go.
I know. There you no, go.
But it's like, this is the reason we fall in love with movies. Just these tight stories that are completely, they are self-contained. You go in, you're introduced to this big cast of characters. We have conflicts between them.
Yep.
We have a mystery to solve. And then we all get out a little under 2 hours later with a completely 100% satisfying ending.
Yeah. And you feel like something you've seen something original.
Yeah.
It's
not something that you recall from childhood or anything else. It's fresh.
And as you said, yes, it's a love letter to all of the whodunits this guy loved.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like he's just, I mean, not to drive by Quentin Tarantino, he's not just remixing elements from movies he likes.
Yeah, it's not a mashup. Yeah.
No, it's not. Like, he's actually doing something interesting in a style he likes.
Agreed.
Yep. And that's the key. So yeah, really just a wonderful movie that I would recommend to everyone. And I would say, I don't think it's going to happen, but if they wanted to nominate Chris Evans for a Best Supporting Actor Oscar, I don't think that would be crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, he does smug.
Yeah.
So well.
He's so good in this movie. He's so good in this movie. And it's like, it's the flashiest part in the movie, and he's fantastic in it. So yeah, I loved him in this.
I wondered if his name, I know they played a pun on his name with "You Did It" as opposed to "Hugh Did It," but I'm wondering if it was also a "Hugh Done It."
Oh,
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know. I honestly did. I honestly thought that. I was like,
Did you write that one down?
No, I didn't. I just thought
it
of
just
that.
Happened
no.
just now. Yeah. Well,
before
bravo.
We leave, you have to say this.
Why
no,
do I work?
No, I didn't. Honestly.
Oh, that's perfect. No, but you're absolutely right. That is. I hope that was intentional.
But even that was a great line.
It was. Like, it really was.
Just, maybe it's a setup just for this one moment where Hugh did it versus you did it, but also it's like, oh no, you make the staff call you Hugh because you're an asshole. So like,
exactly.
Chaos
such
for
a good
it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, all right. So yeah, it is. I will agree that it is one of my favorite movies I've seen this year. Like, without any hesitation, I'm going to agree with that one. And to come off of having the most divisive film.
Yeah.
Like, not only of his career, but of many people's careers.
Right. Right.
Right. To go from that to doing just such a purely wonderful, enjoyable film in every respect. I mean, way to go, Rian Johnson. I've loved you for years and years and years. And to see you getting this kind of success is just fantastic.
It really is. Yeah. It really does kind of put an exclamation mark to the end point of any fanboy tweet that he, you know, that he responded to, because
I know, he got himself
hats.
Into so much trouble.
Yep. Yep. Love it.
But it all worked out.
Yes, it does.
Oh man. And I'm genuinely looking forward to like whatever it is he wants to do next time there. I know, DM, you're not a big fan of Brick.
No, I hate that movie.
Okay, she hates that movie.
Wow. I have very strong feelings about Brick.
Wow.
I know it's just an exercise in style, but I love the style it's an exercise in.
I
did
too.
And I think
too.
He did a great job. Yep. And I love Joseph Gordon-Levitt in that movie. But we all agree that that Looper is fantastic, right?
Yep.
Yes.
And you can listen to the three of us talking about The Last Jedi.
Yep.
If you want.
Yep.
But I was the least fond of it of the three of us, and even I really liked the movie.
Yeah. And Brothers Bloom, I say, if you have not seen that,
good.
Give it another shot. If you pass by it, or you just took a pass after the first few minutes, stick with it. It is a really fun movie.
But this is why, given our relationships with him, I just wanted to ask the big question before we stop, which is, I think this is his best movie so far.
I would feel like his movie. This felt like completely his movie.
Yes.
I agree.
Okay.
It was his tightest, most definitely.
I don't feel like I can weigh in.
Okay, because you haven't seen Brothers Bloom and you hate Brick?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fair. Okay. Well, from two people who were already big fans of the man, this is our favorite film of his. So there you go.
No doubt. No doubt.
Okay. All right. So before we go, do we have any narcissism to watch?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
Rob?
I have a December 18th, 19th. Okay. It's the Wednesday, third Wednesday of December. We are doing our annual Twisted Christmas celebration at the Revival House in Milton, ooh, Delaware. We are screening Gremlins.
Yay!
Yeah, the perfect Christmas film. And,
in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can check out CapeGazette.com. I will finish compiling this decade best of, and then our decade influential films, and then another best and worst of the year upcoming. So we'll. This will most, unless we get an in, a deluge of quality films in the next couple days, you can expect to see Knives Out on there.
Okay, well, I'm really excited about that Ruffalo movie, but I don't know if it's going to be best.
Dark Waters
kind of stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
I just like movies about legal battles.
No, I agree.
And I love Mark Ruffalo, so there you go.
And I like movies called Dark Waters. I think that's like the eighth movie I remember. Most of them are about like mutant crocodiles, but that's okay. We're still...
All right. And of course for me, drop by Vargelon.com for all your Criminal Minds needs. The entire 10th season of Criminal Minds reviews are all up. The 11th season will be going up next week, then 12th, 13th, and 14th in the weeks after that. So God, before the season 14. Comes back.
Hey, yeah, also, I want to give you guys a shout out.
Before the final 15th season comes back, all the reviews will be up.
And a quick shout out to you all. Congratulations on the 500 milestone. That is
thank you.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thanks.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome. That's amazing.
I know. It's kind of shocking that it could go on this long, but here we are.
That's great.
Making
that's
plans great. To all be back here in a couple of weeks to talk about Star Wars. So,
oh, yeah. Or
it's
maybe
gonna
not.
It's going to be pretty exciting. All right. Well, I guess we'll find out, right?
Yes, we will. JJ's right. never let us down before, has he?
Oh, never. No way.
Why did this have to turn sad?
Yeah, I know.
We were in such a good place.
I'm sorry.
Five
you're
ago.
Right. You're right.
All right. So yeah, we'll wrap up there. Is there any way to get in touch with us?
You can visit the AVODs blog at theavod.com. You can leave us a comment there and tell us all about what you liked and didn't like about Knives Out. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and if you're listening on an app, be sure to rate and review.
Yay. So I'm going to encourage you to do all of those things and say until next time, I've been Cam Vargelon.
I've been DM.
And I have been Inspector Clouseau.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.
No. Is that your dog?